He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
And the 2018 auto shows are in full swing around the country, heading for New York, where we will be, both of us, in April.
But the first one, I never know it was the first one in L.A., and that's last
then
year, right?
Then it moved
right?
eastward. That was last year. Detroit Auto Show started right after MLK weekend day, I believe.
Okay.
And Jay's going to comment more on that, but... I ended up in a surprise visit to the Montreal Auto Show this last weekend. I sort of knew it was in, there was an auto show in Montreal, but it was more dealer-oriented than manufacturer-oriented.
It's a different country.
But the one car that jumped out at me, which Jay can't get excited about my excitement over, is this new Subaru Ascent, which is going to be the king-size Subaru version, like the Atlas is the king-size Volkswagen version of the sort of truck-like station wagon or whatever you want to call them, SUV crossovers. The interior of the Subaru is very nice in comparison to the Mazda CX-9. And they really have upgraded the interior to reflect a higher standard for the car, which they hope to lure Subaru owners who sort of end up at the Outback level, the legacy Outback level of their cars, and have no place to go above that, and so those people end up going off to Audi or BMW maybe even, or Mazda, who and many others who have had bigger grown up crossovers than Subaru has until this year, and so that I'm going to be interested in looking at it more in New York.
Does it drive the same as a BMW?
Nothing drives like a BMW. If you listen to the BMW advertising,
but if you
I had to beat Jay to that because he was going to come
into that. If you listened to this show last week, then you would have heard yes. that
nothing drives like a BMW. Whether that's good or bad, I don't know.
The ultimate driving machine.
The ultimate bot driving.
Well,
machine.
It was the ultimate driving machine.
All right.
But I will say the next thing that is really big. It hasn't really caught on in Canada yet, but it's certainly caught on here. And the Detroit Auto Show is the first place where they really actually talked about it, is the pending 2018 year for the pickup truck wars between Dodge, GM, and Ford. And it's all about power. It, my opinion already is that this is a year of power in pickups and power in SUVs. There are lots of special edition SUVs coming out. Ford's got a special edition Edge, for example. Jeep's got the demon powered or whatever, the Hemi powered. What is it? What's that?
Okay, let's be clear and cut to the chase.
So okay,
700 horsepower
in
an SUV,
Grand Cherokee, which allegedly does 3.4 seconds to 60 miles an hour, which is 1/10 of a second slower than the Tesla model, ridiculous, whatever they call it, speed capability or acceleration capability, and.
Which Tesla model?
It's 100.
The
it's
X,
100.
I guess.
The
okay.
X, yeah. No, the S, I think it is. But it doesn't matter. Whatever Tesla can do it, the Jeep is 1/10 of a second slower to 60 miles an hour with a 707 horsepower Jeep Grand Cherokee. They're going to tout that at the auto shows, and then they're going to have these pickup wars going. Ram 1500 is going to have more new features packed into it than any of the other pickups in one model year change. Ford is rumbling along
what
with its Ranger.
What does it do to gas mileage?
Well, there's a lot of this. Not enough to really make a big difference.
Basically.
I want to say one thing about gas mileage in all cars. The number of people, nobody's going to get the stated mileage between fill-ups of their cars and trucks, no matter how good they're. Well, nobody is almost nobody. And because of idling in the wintertime when they're parked doing nothing, because you get no gas mileage when you're not moving and the engine's running.
What I'm wondering is we've spent a ton of time on trying to brainwash people or convince them that they don't mind four cylinder engines because they're all very powerful and good gas mileage. And then you're telling me that on the side, or at least it sounds like this, and I'm not, you know, I'm not a car guy, but it sounds like on the side there is the demon this and the this and the
yes,
this where that, you can
that's,
get
that's,
some...
That's interesting.
Well, I think there's a... every brand wants to have an image vehicle. Jeep makes utility vehicles, so they put a V8 that they have in the arsenal of engines. They put a robust 700 horsepower engine in a Jeep Grand Cherokee. That Jeep Grand Cherokee has big tires. It's got summer tires.
A programmable suspension.
I don't believe it has a tow package, or maybe the new one does, but it really cannot tow more than a regular Jeep Grand Cherokee. So all it is it's a performance vehicle disguised as an SUV.
That costs $100,000.
And there's not a lot of – there's not a very big market for that. So let's we're talking a lot about
image cars
that don't really matter much.
Right. Well, but the mileage – back to your question about the mileage situation is – the mileage was big under the Obama administration because they were really pushing to get this extraordinary average miles per gallon over the fleet of cars and or trucks that the manufacturers were going, and they were heading for 35.6 at one in one decade, and they were actually trying to aim for something in the 40s in another decade. And I don't think with pickup trucks they were ever going to be able to do it unless they made the pickup truck go away, because the utility factors of a pickup truck mean it's here to stay in its current size. Now you've got a new administration who's backed off, and basically there is no final answer about what the miles per gallon requirements are going to be currently, and they've backed off a lot of the,
what I'm
the
curious,
pending
what are,
legislation.
What are the lobbyists lobbying for?
The current administration's lobbyists, there isn't, I don't know what lobbyists are doing. I just know what the head man is doing, and he's basically throwing a wrecking ball at the EPA as far as mandating.
We're going on a tangent here.
She's asking the question.
What I'm essentially trying to find out is whether we are still as whether speed, which is far more speed and heft, is far more marketable than quiet.
No, I don't think speed is far more marketable than quiet and good mileage. But there's the segment that is going on the speed end of things. Is basically going to wreck the miles per gallon thing, but nobody's going to complain right now.
I think techno gizmos and safety features really drive sales, and you find more and more features, techno features, whether it be in the center consoles, things like CarPlay, you know, so you can use your center console and interact with your iPhone, let's say, or your other smartphone. Whether it be safety features with, you know, where a dozen airbags in a car now, cars that can stop themselves. And I know we've been talking a lot on this show about autonomous vehicles, but one of the techno features that allows adaptive cruise control is the same feature that also stops cars in emergency situations. And that feature is coming to almost every car on the market. It was an option on most. And I don't know if there's...
I think in 2020, they've got to be mandatory.
There is a timeline. There's
an option.
Yes, and there's a timeline. And it's a very good thing.
Right.
And those are things we are seeing across the board in cars, in SUVs. I don't know about pickup trucks, but I'm sure I don't pay too much attention to pickup trucks. But I'm sure they're coming; those features are coming there too, and they're trickling down to smaller and less expensive cars. So the technology is becoming more affordable and is trickling down to smaller cars.
And yet last week, for example, and this is part of the blurry message, if nothing else, last week's car story was all about steering wheelless GM cars.
And Ford had been talking about it also.
It wasn't all about it, but it was
the news of the week.
If you're not a car, if you don't subscribe to automotive, right. If you're just a regular person,
it made the news.
Let's be clear.
The steering wheel less car is decades away. Okay, and as much as I love talking about autonomous driving, and as much as I believe in it, and as much as I think it is somewhere there in the future, it is far in the future, and especially on roads like we have around here, and driving conditions that we are experiencing now, autonomous cars are not going to do the trick, not anytime soon, right. Not on snowy, icy roads. But again, some of that technology is used for just plain safety purposes, and that is a plus.
And marketing purposes as well. Okay. And the cars are being built with the technology available. You can turn it on with a switch or a program or something like that, but it may not be usable in the particular car that you or I buy until such time as legislation has allowed this technology that may be in the computer programs of the cars, but not activated, are activated.
All right.
So we won't know what's in there or not unless we're really technologically ingrained with the need to know, and we talk to our salesperson
and
buying
it gets
the
marketed.
Car. We've read everything about it. We know what models have it and what models don't.
Okay, one truly random question for the civilian. How long do these car shows last?
Generally a week.
Okay. Yeah. Same.
Maybe 2 weeks in some cases, but not a lot longer. Okay. Like we are going, our little group goes every year on a Wednesday, the first Wednesday of the show, which has started out on the Saturday weekend before, and they have the press days for the press people to go down. I know. And then they have the official opening. If the press days are Friday, the official opening is on a Saturday, and so on, a day later.
Do you think it's more fun to go to a press preview, or just out of curiosity, or is it fun, or do you like hearing what other people are saying? I don't.
No, I think, I have not gone to a press opening yet. I think if you want to talk to the car executives, you go to with the press and listen to the press buzz about, and then they have the unveilings of the new models, which are unveiled by the time we the public get to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I do not know whether I'd learn anything more by going to a press opening as opposed to just cruising through. I think I like to go with the masses, and the buzz is all about the cars, but you get to walk around. We're there. Our group is there for roughly 4 hours, 3 to 4 hours, and by which time we've seen all we need to see, bumped enough shoulders to make sure we have schmoozed with the crowds.
I don't know if it's a slightly different take. I'm not sure I necessarily like mingling with the masses. And I'll say this about the New York Auto Show, and I think I've been like twice or three times now. I find it surprising that a lot of the people we see there are city people. And so a lot of them are looking at vehicles that they're never going to buy.
Very true, but that goes in every auto show.
Yes, and I think the auto shows are in part for professionals and for the press, and the press, then leverages
some people probably go as more like a museum exhibition.
Well, it is like going to an amusement park.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah, rather than wow, cool, it's a car show.
Well, it's as good a people watching event as it is a car watching or vehicle watching event, because you sit there I don't know what Jay does, but you watch these people get in these cars and they sit and they're not a lot of people know a lot of them, but not a lot about them probably, but a lot of other people think they do. But they all get in, they oogle, and they are going. And as Jay said, many of them aren't going to buy a car because they're city-oriented people and not driving out in the country. Or else they're just, this is the best way to get up close and personal besides reading it in a car magazine.
And I hate to say this, I'm always a little disappointed by the high-end cars.
Yeah, because they put the high-end models out.
I just find them to be...
You know how they chain high-end clothing to the mannequin so you can't really tell?
Yeah, they lock the real high-ends up on the rotation pedestals,
you can't
get in them because they don't want you to steal the gear shift knob or whatever.
Or anything
else.
Like that. Quick question, though. Do you make a beeline for any particular... I just, do you always... Is it like the e-ticket used to be at Disneyland where you just make... those were the best rides. Is there... always an exhibit that, you know,
that's a personal judgment situation. If we, if Jay has a fixation on BMWs, for example, he might want to go there. But we, I generally go in and try to go around in a
circumferential move. So there's not one place that you want to hit first. All right.
And because we want, I want to see generally all the shows except for cars I'm disinterested in. And I'm not very interested in Fiat, for example.
Right.
And they have an area. But I don't care about the Fiat 500. I know enough about it to know it's not very relevant on our roads, and you don't see them around here. And beyond that, it's just a nice place to go and try to catch up on what the automobile manufacturers have decided to offer us at the shows. And some manufacturers aren't showing up at the Detroit Auto Show at all, and some may not show up at the New York Auto Show. And with the increasing presentation of electrics and hybrids and all that, and trucks, we may not see certain sedans. I'm not sure what we're going to see. Every show, every year is a little different.
So what was special in Montreal?
Not a whole lot. It's smaller up there. I mean, they don't have... I went in the evening. It was...
Is that the main? I'm just curious because is that the main Canadian art? Or do they have one in Montreal and one in Toronto?
I went to Toronto beforehand. Okay. I read about that, but this one was in Montreal. Just and I went to it.
Okay.
So this week I did a little. Last week. Today is Monday, so it was last week. Friday, I believe, I did what Robin likes to do a lot and go and
torture dealers.
Torture dealers and be
it's always a good thing.
Be a tire kicker and
yeah.
And I happened to go in this Volkswagen dealership and was told that basically the sales guy after a couple of minutes said to me, there's not a car here you'd really want to drive. And
that's a good way to sell cars.
Absolutely.
Guess what? 3 minutes later, we were driving a car.
Yeah.
And I had been there for 25 minutes or half an hour. And after he told me, nah, that's not a car you want to drive here.
Jay turned that one.
I turned around and I looked in the showroom and I said, well, what about this? And so you might relate to this.
So did that work?
You'll relate to this.
You'll relate
your car.
To this. It's smaller, but I test drove a... all-wheel drive Golf wagon. We know I love wagons. We know that we need all-wheel drive in our neck of the woods.
It's the genesized of your car.
But yeah. When are they going to make it bigger?
The Atlas is here.
Why do you want it bigger?
For the four dogs?
Atlas. The Atlas is for you, okay?
Well, then...
Without the third row seat, that can be the dog compartment. But that's what Subaru's done with the Ascent. They've made it bigger for people who have special purpose uses for the big, larger size vehicles. So that answers your question.
Most people are relatively reasonable and have one, sometimes two dogs.
I understand.
Three or four, you know, you're pushing it a little bit.
That's
so
like
you,
have one or two children, but some people have eight.
Yeah, you know? Then they buy an Ascent.
Then they buy a Tahoe or something. Yeah. You know?
But if most people with one or two dogs could live with a Golf
very happily.
Wagon. Very happily. And I test drove the Golf wagon, and... It had a very Audi-esque ride. It feels like an Audi inside. It's very well finished. I have an upscale Touareg, you know, high-end or big SUV. I don't know if it's high-end, but it's very well built, and it's also Audi-esque. And that build quality trickles down all the way into the Golf.
But get to the point because it's really eye-opening.
And the point is...
Price.
You can drive out with a brand-new Golf wagon,
2017,
for $20,000.
That's pretty amazing.
It's a 2017.
It was a stripped version, though.
2017's brand new, 0 miles on them. So I went on Auto Trader after visiting that dealer and saw that there were similar, if not better, deals, you know,
and
across the country.
And other dealerships.
Yeah. And so there are great deals on 2017 Golf wagons and Alltracks.
And VWs in general. Jay sent me the list, and was amazing. And they were all virtually new cars, and they were all between $3,000 and $5,000 off, maybe more even.
And would you have known this just cruising Auto Trader, or is it better to go to the dealership, torture the salesperson, which is why they are supposed to be there, drive a car, and then go look for
It was a random – I had to be at that dealership. I was bringing a car in to be serviced in one of their other brands, actually.
Okay.
So I went from one door to the other.
I love that, where you actually go in here for this car, go in here for that car.
And and the sales guy was also very very laid back and was a car guy. And actually, we were in a Volkswagen dealership, and he was talking to me. He talked a long time about the Corvette he was looking at buying. You know, that was $16,000, and basically, it was a great deal, and he had to make a couple more sales before he could buy his Corvette.
And Jay didn't help him.
And so. I didn't help him. No, I did not. Well, maybe
But maybe you will.
Maybe I will.
Merely by mentioning the fact that you can get a decent.
The thing is that we've talked about leftover values, leftover model year values on this show before. And this is a good time if you've got the money and you've got the credit and you want to go buy, you don't need the latest model year out there. There are opportunities all over the place to buy these leftover 2017s at excellent values that you don't see during the current model year offerings. Although I will say there's some aggressive advertising going on, and we'll see it at the Super Bowl, of 2018 model years. Offers in pickup trucks and other vehicles in General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler, because this is telling us something. Car sales are not moving on their own, or vehicle truck sales or SUV sales even, are not moving on their own without a lot of incentives to lure us into the showroom and try to make a deal. But if you don't know in advance, you will not get it necessarily thrown at you without your prodding a little bit to find out what's going on.
I would think so. Now, is everybody up to 72 months, as though that's not...
Yes.
As though that's not 6 years?
They're up to 72 months.
It is.
I understand.
0% financing is still available, even though interest rates have been climbing.
But if you're trying to get somebody to do something new, and this is, I would think, the complication, you're saying 72 months... which, again, no one is sitting there translating to, wow, that's 6 years. I'm not going to be able to get anything new for 6 years.
Oh, yes, you can. You can trade data when old, and it can be underwater, and they add the remaining payments to the new payments, and you're further in debt, and don't say you can't do it.
Okay.
Because that's not the way
you can also live 6 years with a car. Yes. And and I'll say it again and again and again, we've never had better cars or never had better built cars than we have today.
Right, but you have to make a commitment, basically. Can you what about truck leasing? Does that
The trucks have got leases.
All right.
You were able to lease a 1500 Ram pickup truck or a Ford for $199 a month. I don't know how few miles you were limited to, but that was after a certain amount of money down, which could be anywhere from $3,000 to $6,000, but you can't read it in the small print of the ad. And then it's $199 a month for 36 months or something like that, and you may be limited to 700 miles a month, which a pickup owner is not going to be able to do. So it's a lead-in to get you to do it.
Depends on the business you're in. I mean, I know...
Yeah, or you can buy extra.
I know professional contractors around here who drive vans and pickup trucks. They don't necessarily drive all that much. They need the utility vehicle. But
we're coming to a close. So as Jay said on the way over, most people who can live within these limited lease, mileage lease terms are people who have more than one vehicle to use, so they can spread their driving between those two vehicles, be it a gasoline car and a hybrid.
I was saying that about a
truck and a sedan. He was saying that about a hybrid car.
In a different context, right?
But it goes across the board. And that can be done. But you just have to pay attention if you really want to get the cheapest leased vehicle on the road, because your payments are going to be limited by your income or whatever other things you are leasing at the same time.
It must be terribly sad to live in the city and be able to have only one car. Everybody needs at least three cars.
No, they don't, but I'm going to close by saying one thing. Coming back from Canada, I stopped at a gas stop, and there was a Jeep. What's the little one? The little square one. And I said, "Do you love that car, the Renegade?" And they said, yes, it's great to park in New York. And I never thought about what that so what they like
right
that vehicle for. It's so short wheelbase. It's small like not a Fiat 500, but like a Mini Cooper. And they liked it because they can park it easily in New York.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.